Our next guest is the new general manager of the Frankston Dolphins Football Club. And he was actually headhunted by the club after the VFL removed their playing licence for the 2017 season. And he's been kind enough to join us live here in the studio. Gary Bucanaro, welcome to After the Siren.
Thanks, Neil. Nice to be here.
It's nice to put a face to the name. We did speak to you a couple of years ago.
Yeah, we've been chatting a few times, haven't we?
You were up in the far northwest.
Yeah.
You were up on holidays at that time. I think were you in Northern Territory or up?
That's right. I was up on a fishing trip, so.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was good.
Gee, a bit of a difference in that time, mate, with your beloved Hawks. Gee, they were absolutely on top of the world. Yeah. The minute you've left, mate, what's happened?
Yeah, it's been a bit interesting just watching him, and I agree with some of the comments of the players. It just seems as though they've lost that fanaticism around the ball and, that real hunger for the contest, and hopefully they can pick it up, because without it, any team's going to struggle without having that as a prerequisite.
What are your thoughts on four-time premiership players moving on? There's two there in Jordan Lewis and Sam Mitchell. For me, as a Richmond supporter, I'm baffled as to a four-time premiership player would leave the club and not be a one-club player, particularly a Brownlow medalist. And arguably, I think he's been the best player in the last 5 years in the competition.
Yeah, it wouldn't be too many seasons where your best and fairest and your runner-up and your best and fairest move on. I don't think that's nearly unprecedented, I think. But I think it's planning for the future. You know, the club's taken maybe a bit of short-term pain for some long-term game. Hopefully that the players that they have in mind and the deals that they've got done are the right ones. And only time will tell with that, because having a crystal ball is a wonderful thing.
Gee, if only we could get our hands around that one, mate.
Yeah.
I really loved your opening statement when you took on the role, Gary, which said, "I'm not here to save the Frankston Dolphins. I'm simply here to re-energise the place." I really thought, straight away, very positive message on the front foot, and the dynamics totally changed from that message, that moment on, in my opinion.
Mm. Well, look, what's happened in the past, you can't do anything about. And the Frankston Dolphins and the Frankston Football Club has had a huge history for a long period of time in VFA and VFL and, on the peninsula. So, what's happened has happened, and we have an opportunity now to set some strong foundations with some really good people around the place, build relationships, and hopefully the people on the peninsula do want to see the elite level of football returned. And I'm feeling a groundswell of support that's starting to happen around the place. People are putting their hands up to come and help us and spread the message that we are important. We need to be there for the pathway of football. And it's been heartening, and I'm really enjoying the opportunity to put things in a little bit better place, and hopefully set a solid foundation for the futures ahead.
That's a really good answer. How did your Dolphins in Business luncheon go with your special guest speaker last week in John Longmire? How'd that day go?
Fantastic, and that's all a part of what we're trying to do. We've been lucky enough to get some great speakers to our Dolphins in Business, probably apart from myself, but I did the previous one. No, but that went well, and John Longmire was really interesting. Got a fascinating insight into, how a footy club endeavours to run its operation in terms of looking after players and coaching young men and trying to build better citizens, looking after them, build better footballers for your footy club. So it was a fascinating insight, and everyone that was there, and we had 100 people there, so it was fantastic. Good result. We did okay out of the day. And all these people like John Longmire. We've got Luke Beveridge on the 22nd, a dinner with Luke Beveridge.
And the number one player of all time.
And on Lee the 18th Matthews. Of May, we've got an intimate dinner with Lee Matthews at the Athenaeum Club, which Ian Dicker has helped us to organise. And Peter and Paul Hudson on the 4th of August. And Kevin Muscat and Anthony Del Pietro for Melbourne Victory. So we've got some really great speakers, and momentum's building around them, as is our memberships. We've gone from 100, we're nearly at 450.
Very important announcement that is now, while we've got our listeners.
Yeah, well,
your target's 1,000 at
$50? We've got 1,000 by June 30, and we know the $50 is more like a donation to the footy club, but what it does is it spells out that there is support on the peninsula for the Frankston Dolphins. we're getting good corporate support based on if we've got our license back, they'll be back on board. And even a lot of our sponsors have stayed on board because at Frankston Park, or may I say, we've now called it Mornington Isuzu Ute Stadium.
Yeah, well, that was announced at your luncheon last Friday.
Yeah, yeah, thanks to Peter Van Breeder, and he's been a great supporter of the club. So we've got 30-odd games, 30-plus games this year at the ground. So that's MPNFL games. We had a VFL game today. We've got another one later. We've got TAC Cup, VFL Women's, Coringle, because their ground is being redeveloped, playing their home games at the stadium as well. So, look, we've got a lot of stuff going on at the ground. But the real business that is going to drive this footy club into the future, and the one that is so important for us to get up and running, is Functions by the Bay, our two function centres there in the new facility. That's the business that will drive the football club into the future. And anyone who's going to have a wedding or a conference or an engagement party or a party of significance, that's the one we'd love to hear from you and build that up, because nobody knows about it, and it's the best view over the bay you've ever seen.
It's a fantastic facility and definitely underutilised, as you pointed out in your opening media release. I did see that. And yeah, it's a fantastic facility. For those who are listening and haven't been down to the Dolphins ground, it's a fantastic place, and it is a fantastic facility too. I was just going through the board. You've got a very competent board, and the support, Dennis Hovenden, he's the CEO of the Frankston Council. That's got to be a good look, that in the city of Frankston, the number one man and CEO is right behind you or supporting you.
That's right, and the CFO, Tim Federico. We've got John Hook from the AFL Victoria. He's a non-voting board member, but he's certainly helping us. AFL Victoria have been fantastic in assisting us and giving us direction in terms of the pillars that we need to achieve when we do apply for our licence back on June the 30th. So they've been really helping us, which is great. And
Michelle Graham,
the Graham Quarries, yeah, they've been so supportive of this footy club for so long. What a great family. And we've got David Friend, who Ian Dicker also got involved from his Hawthorne days. David was involved in membership and marketing and community, and so he's come on board, and this is why the big membership push is happening. So David's been instrumental. We've got a really good program that he's starting to set up in Dolphins Rewards, where, you know, we've got some travel deals that will be released probably in a week or two's time, where if you're going to travel overseas, you know, 60 and 70% off accommodation houses overseas and locally as well. So you're going to pick up your $50 in credit by joining the Frankston Footy Club and being a part of Dolphins Rewards. So David's been fantastic in setting that up. And, yeah, look, we have, you know, a good blend of people. Peter Geddes, former listed medalist, he's the president. Mick O'Neill, vice president. Peter Barr, you know, has a big history going back with the club.
You're assisting Wayne, in the footy department?
Yeah, Wayne Locke is the accountant, and I've probably missed David Friend, of course. And, yeah, so we have a really good board, a nine-strong board that is really diverse, and they're all putting their hand up to help.
What about the most important dynamic in a football club, and that's on field with the playing group? And like, I believe Brett Lovett's your assistant there, trying to assist with the criteria that you're presenting in your
Brett's,
submission?
Brett's helping out. We've formed a footy subcommittee. So obviously John Hook from AFL Victoria, Mick O'Neill's heading that up as the vice president in charge of football in his portfolio on the board. We've also got John Giorgio, Sean Mullane, myself, and Brett Lovett, of course, on the committee. So we'll be looking at all things, you know, local players, you know, Dandenong Stingrays, Gippsland Power. But probably one of the most important things is to find the coach that's going to be the right fit for the footy club going forward.
So are you hinting that the second half of the season, all things gauged and going well, with the yes for 2018, will you obviously just roam the peninsula? Is that like with, because a lot of guys from the last season's list playing in our competition. Yeah. So clearly they'll be first cab off the rank status. Would they be in being reapproached?
We feel that, you know, we'll probably get our 10 or so from the Stingrays that don't get picked up, but we think there are other TAC club cup clubs that will want to join us because we're a standalone team and we offer 23 spots every week, whereas some of the kids that go to the aligned clubs, there may be only one or two spots a week, given if an AFL club doesn't have injuries, they're unlikely to get a game. So the standalone clubs play a really important role in that, in the pathway, because they offer 23 spots a week for players to get a game and put their talents on show at VFL level. So yeah, the Peninsula will supply players. There's no doubt about that. And we'll be very interested in the Interleague.
What's my next question? Yeah, what about next Saturday at the MCG?
At the MCG, we'll certainly be well represented at that game. And where John Giorgio is one of the line coaches. So, we're letting him train at Frankston Park. So we're building up a good rapport with them. And hopefully on the MCG, they can have a good win against the Geelong area, which will be a tough one because they've always been very strong. But they will supply not only some young players, but maybe some experience. And, of course, we've got 14 Dolphins that are playing in other VFL clubs this year who can return to us if they wish. If they don't choose to come back to us, then that club will have to pay us a transfer fee for them. So we've got a starting point, but, of course, a coach is very important too.
And I realise you're limited with what you can and can't say clearly at this point because you've certainly got a date with destiny, which
we can't say. We should know by the end of July. AFL Victoria will probably make that decision and give us a yay or a nay. And then if it's a yay, there's a lot of work to be done. We've got to, you know, talk to a lot of people and, you know, we've got timelines and time frames too with, you know, being respectful to people that are playing for other clubs and coaching other clubs possibly. But we've got to have a long list and start crossing names off that aren't interested or maybe want to talk to us a bit later on. So,
what's your general opinion on where the game is in general? Like for a guy who's a four-time premiership player at AFL level, team of the century at Hawthorn, member, you've certainly done a lot. You've coached at the highest level as well. And now you're in this role down here on the peninsula, getting a bit of a feel for local grassroots football. What's your general thoughts on where the game's at?
At the grassroots level? Look, I'm pleasantly surprised with the interleague standard that I've seen at training and that the ball movement's terrific. So the level of footy... And I've always had a theory, you recruit footballers first. Athletes, you can improve certain parts of a person's body shape or... endurance capabilities, maybe a little bit of speed, but very hard to replace footy nous, footy skill. And so I've always been on the cases when you're looking for players, you look for footballers and then you look at areas, well, can he improve in our system? Can we get a little bit more out of him in terms of his physical output? So that's the way I approach it and that's the way we'll look at footballers in going forward.
What about the AFL? What are your thoughts on where the game's at the moment? I know without obviously saying much, but it's interesting to hear someone who's an ex-player, an ex-coach.
Yeah, I'm not someone to say the good old days were the best or whatever. I think the good footballers and football in all areas has been fantastic. Rule changes can... You know, we've been fiddling with the rules a little bit, which...
what do you think of the handball and through the point? How can a player, in all honesty, measure... when he's hot, is it a metre? Is it 3 metres? How do you know that without having eyes in the back of your head and your teammates actually telling you how hot you are?
And there's a little bit of footy now involved in that too, knowing, having awareness of where you are, where players are around you. And the game is a frenetic game at the moment. It's, there's some of the handballs, if you can call them handballs, are so quick. And the players train for that. You watch an AFL club train now, they're in tight all the time, very quick decisions. I think the good players of any era would be good players, given the same training and whatever, because good footballers are good footballers. I reckon the good games today are fantastic to watch. I think the games that do my head in a little bit, when it's just kicking sideways, kicking backwards, no ball movement, no quick ball movement, and it's just played in between the two half-forward flanks. I think they're the hard games to watch, and I tend to last too long watching them on TV, I'm afraid, nowadays. But I still love the game. I have a passion for it, and I have been one that has been able to evolve with the game, you know, from being a player myself to a coach, and, you know, seeing how it's changed over the years. And, you know, I'm not one to say I hate it now. I still love the game. I love footy. I'm very passionate about the pathway and giving young kids a great opportunity to play at the highest level if they want to. And that's why the Dolphins is so important, to give the local community kids through the peninsula that opportunity without having to relocate, say, to Williamstown, like six of our Dolphins from last year who are playing at Williamstown have had to leave the area and rent in Williamstown because it's just too much of a hike. And the next closest club is Coburg as a standalone side, so they have to relocate over there. So this will be a, unless we have an elite level, you know, the local lads will, if they want to pursue a VFL dream without us, they have to go and leave the area. And I think it's a shame. I just really reckon we can have a really good model here where the Dolphins can provide and work with the local peninsula clubs in providing a great pathway.
What are your thoughts on the Seaford base there once that becomes vacant? What?
I think they're lining up about 10 deep for that. Look,
it's a fantastic facility.
Yeah, well, Linen House, once St Kilda move out of that, yes, it's got everything that probably an AFL Southeast got their eyes on. Dandenong Stingrays have probably got their eyes on it. Whether, you know, St Kilda will put their women if they get the AFLW licence in it. So lots of things going on in that space. So I guess just watch that space. But, you know, with our long-term plan too, we see VFL women's as a opportunity. So we have a pathway for boys and girls, you know, through, you know, now that there's the elite women's program started through 16s and 18s. And in time, hopefully we can provide the women with a, you know, Dolphins women team playing in that VFL competition as well. So they're all plans, and we'd love to get the lights upgraded to night match quality and broadcast quality at Frankston Park. And I think there's movement at the station there. So watch this space around that as well in the short future coming back, if we get our licence back. And, you know, we're confident we will.
Good to hear. And the AFLW, what was your thought on the women's competition pre-season?
It was very popular, wasn't it? And I love the fact that the girls are getting an opportunity, and what we're doing now is creating another pathway for them. So we're getting more young people out there training and doing sport, not just boys, but now girls. And the groundswell of activity around the women's game is growing and growing, and it's definitely here to stay. And if you're boo-hooing it, you're only doing yourself and your club a disservice. It's here to stay. Let's embrace it. Let's make it as good as it can possibly be, and let's support it. And it's providing young women and with an opportunity to play a sport that they're passionate about too, because you see the passion in the games that they're playing. They go in pretty hard.
There's it's certainly got to be willing, don't they?
That's right.
It's been interesting to see how some girls have changed codes or the sport, like with the MVP winner being a national basketball player for the Open.
Playing in basketball competitions in the US, and, you know, her pathway. But her dad, Greg, was a fantastic footballer, for Port Adelaide and Collingwood, and so he made a big name himself. And so obviously footy, she's grown up with football and has a love for it. And, you know, it just goes to show what good hand-eye coordination can do for you. Having a footy in your hands or a basketball, you learn hand-eye coordination, and then you'll be, you're on the right track. And so she adapted to the oval ball very well.
Oh, it was unbelievable. And the Adelaide, you know, girls to go on and win the inaugural, you know, premiership, which MVP, best on the ground. Like, terrific. I think it just became all about her that last couple of weeks, wasn't it?
It was terrific.
Took everything before her, which is a credit to her.
I was really impressed with it. And, the crowds turned up, and, you know, so people supported it. So that was great.
Well, the girls' comp kicks off this weekend, the Victorian Women's Footy League. So we've got the various VFL, yes. clubs. And
we've got the Seaford Tigerettes down here.
Well, and, I was just going to say, Sarah and Jessica Hosking, they were twin sisters who 18 months ago were playing the Nepean Team of the Year. They were named in the Nepean Team of the Year playing for Rye.
Yeah,
in fantastic. Netball. So yeah. Change codes 18 months later. Here they are playing in the W comp. And members of the Seaford Tigerettes. We've actually got Kate Gillespie-Jones as our guest today. We're going to join her later on in the program, approximately 6:15. So, not sure if you listened to SEN yesterday. A former teammate of yours in Don Scott had a chat.
No, I missed
it. It was 21 years since the Melbourne Hawthorn merger, and he actually was the guest. It was very interesting to hear what he had to say. And he's down at Sorrento. And he was just saying the behind the scenes, which is similar to the Dolphins, trying to get a platform to start again. And you mentioned Peter Hudson. I actually had a chat to him at a luncheon last year and listened to him speak about all those times, because I think he was actually the president. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think Brian Coleman was the president.
Oh, he might have, but he was certainly involved.
I think Peter was certainly at the club at the
time.
Yeah,
well, he certainly was involved. And the thing that he said, which brought the momentum forwards for the merger, was Hawthorn had 13,000 members, signed members, pre the merger talks. The night of the vote, by the end of that night, that went from 13 to 28,000. Did you know that?
No, I knew the numbers just went through the roof because people were aware that memberships were important. And, you know, you had all that success through the 80s, and to that point in time in the mid-90s, there was 13,000 members. So it wasn't something that was a focus for a lot of footy clubs back then, but then it became the really important. And so the membership drives through the David Friends, who is now with us, got that to that 28,000 point of view. Ian Dicker came on board. He got voted in as president. Don, with his passion, helped rally the troops to say, well, without your memberships, we're going to fold and we'll be taken over by Melbourne. And people got off their backsides and joined the club and made sure that we and that footy club, you know, with the direction of Don and Ian Dicker at the helm, and made some great decisions going forward. And the club is very, very well off now, and to the point where they're going to buy their own facility at Dingley and have set up a magnificent training and training facility there. So great story, and it just shows what can be done.
Yeah, you're reiterating exactly the Dolphins' position. That's the reason we've mentioned it.
If we can get some passion out there and to say, well, you know, maybe I didn't follow it, but I love footy and I think it's important that the Dolphins are here so that we do provide that elite pathway. You know, you might have a talented young under 12 or 14 player that in 4 or 5 years' time, he might be good enough to be on the Dolphins list. So, you know, that's the point that I make. Without us here, the pathway is very limited down here, and the talented footballers, if they want to pursue, will have to go elsewhere to pursue to play at the highest level possible, which is not a you know, bad thing playing local for your local team. But if you want to get that and more exposure at an AFL level or VFL level, then yeah, unfortunately, probably at the moment have to relocate to do it.
Well, it certainly shows it works at the Dolphins when you look at, like, you know, Marigliano, I can't pronounce his surname. Sorry, there you go. Sorry, mate.
Look,
he's an example of a mature age player who you know, came down to the Dolphins, got a run, and ended up with the Bombers.
The Dolphins have provided probably over the last 20 years the most players drafted into the AFL from VFL. The whole peninsula region's provided something like 240 players over the journey to some of the great names in the game.
Well, the number one man's a Chelsea man, Lee Matthews, so he's obviously a peninsula. Well, that's still in our competition.
So it's a proven football breeding ground, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, someone probably will, but the peninsula is the number one participation area in Australia.
I know it is in cricket, so you probably could be right there. Like, I wouldn't know the answer to
so
that.
So participation levels is number of registered players playing the game, boys, girls, etc. So that also is another major reason why we should be really pushing to keep the Dolphins there. And if anybody can afford that $50 membership this year, help us get somewhere close. We'd love to get 1,000, but if we can get close to it, it still shows AFL Victoria that we're serious. We've got groundswell of support. People want us here, and we want to be here, and we want to provide a great opportunity for the young, talented players through the peninsula region.
Fantastic. It's a great positive message to finish on. But before we let you go, because I know you're certainly on the way out and you're, as always, time for, but can't let you go, Gary, without the most infamous incident in your career, and that was the preliminary final in 1987. So just give us your thoughts on a minute or two in the lead-up to that, and then tell us exactly, which everyone knows about, what happened.
Well, Melbourne led all day. We never led until after the final siren. So it was a heartbreak for Melbourne. They were on a real roll, and we seemed to kick against the wind for three quarters that day, and it seemed like the gods were on Melbourne's side. And they had their opportunities to win the game. They missed easy goals. They ran into open goals and just kept us in the game. And we snuck up on them, and 20 seconds when Michael Tuck kicks out, Peter Swab marks, handballs to Langford. Langford kicks it to me. I get pushed in the back from Rod Grinter. Siren's gone. I didn't hear the siren. Russell Green comes up to me and says, "For God's sake, Bucky, kick the goal. The siren's gone."
Thank you.
Thank you, Russ. I didn't need that extra pressure. Jim Stein runs through the mark. I get 15 metres, which takes me to, 35. Have to probably kick it from 40. And thankfully, I didn't think about missing. I thought about just what I normally always did, and down the park as a young kid kicking goals to win the grand final after the siren, which we all
every
did
kid's
as
dream.
Kids. Yeah. And lived it. It wasn't a grand final, but it was that moment where I blocked everything out and was able to kick the goal. And it was a great personal moment. Would have been even great if we had won the premiership in 87, but we didn't. We got beaten. We had a cold, wet day at Waverley Park on the preliminary final, and then I think it was 34 degrees grand final day the next week. So,
well, the one thing I remember out of the grand final, mate, was Michael Tuck wearing a sleeveless jumper for the once. Well, I think it was the first and only time in his record breaking 426 games.
I think that put all our players in shock when we first saw his arms. That was such a shock we never got over it.
That's why he wore the long sleeves.
Yeah, that's right. But credit to Carlton, they won then. But it was a great moment. And Melbourne supporters, geez, memories like elephants, Melbourne supporters. I know whenever I meet a Melbourne supporter, because the first thing they say to you is, "You so-and-so." And I said, "Oh, you must be a Melbourne supporter." "Yeah. Would you have kicked it without the 15-metre penalty?" And I always say to them, "Yes, I would have," because it makes them feel a little bit better.
Well, Dermot said, "You're an absolute Monty." As soon as you took the mark, he said, they got the free kick for the push in the back. He said, if anyone we wanted in the forwards to have the ball in his hands under that pressure... Yeah. At that distance, he said it was all Gary Bucanara.
See, no one will ever know. That's the beauty of it, whether I would have kicked it or not. But anyway, I kicked it, and seemingly that 40 metres has gone out a little bit extra every year. You always put an extra metre onto it, so it's up to about 60 metres now.
Malcolm Blight style. That's over right. The three figures now, I think, his goal after the sign at Princes Park. What about the late, great Yabby Jeans before we let you go, mate, with all our listeners? I know, we've got you here, and the name Alan Jeans certainly does put the hair on the back of your neck stand up. I've heard Dermot speak and almost bring tears not only to himself but to the entire room when he mentioned his name.
Yeah.
What was the man, what was he like?
He was a great guy. The media never really saw much personality in him, but he had a great sense of humour. He was very dry, he was very sharp. But what made Alan a great coach was he knew his players. He knew what could get the best out of me, and it probably wasn't banging me over the head or being derogatory to me in any way. He sort of had to sort of pump some players up because they were confident players, whereas a Dipper or a Dermot or a Lee Matthews, he'd put it on them in front of the players. "You got to lift, you got to do this, you're not doing it well," and they'd react in a different way. So I guess that's the beauty of being a coach, is to know your subjects, know what's going to get the best out of each individual player. He was a master at doing that. Some of his speeches were amazing. I think that the Battle of 89 documentary that was done by Rob Dixon, and finished off by his brother.
Peter.
Rob did a fantastic job on that. And you can hear some of Alan Jeans's speeches in that. And if you listen to that, you'll get to understand what we heard from him week in, week out. And he not only was a great coach, a great thing, but he was a great, and he loved his players, and we had a great relationship with him. And till the day he died, he had the undying respect and love of the players that were through the year with him at Hawthorn.
Best player you played with?
I'd have to say Lee Matthews. At the end of his career, Lee, you know, I played with him 82, 83, 84, 85. And he was 5'9", played full forward. He was kicking 60 and 70 goals as a full forward.
915 overall,
pretty,
mate.
Pretty unheard of, you know,
forward pocket
to do that.
Changing rover.
And the great thing was, is if we weren't going so well, Alan would always go to Lee, you know, and say at half time or three quarter time, Lee, we need something from you.
The 85 preliminary.
Yeah.
Against Footscray, won the game.
Something always happened when Alan said that. Someone went off on a stretcher from the opposition, or he'd kick four goals in a quarter. So he certainly was a brilliant footballer. And I know playing, when Lee was behind me at full forward, I knew my half-back flanker knew Lee Matthews was around or behind him somewhere. So it was nice to have that little bit of a backup.
Well, Kevin Sheen, when he was playing on him, mate, as a Geelong player, said, mate, there was two things. See ball, get ball, and look out if you got in between.
Have a bit of
Lee Matthews
of vision,
and the footy.
Because he was a master at picking them off if they weren't ready for it.
Yeah, I think...
in a fair way, too. You know, look, Lee copped as good as he gave and...
absolutely.
And never whinged about it. But he was a tough player, but, you know, he's... he was just brilliant.
I remember on the back page of the Herald Sun in 1982 against Match of the Day, Princess Park, the co-tenants, Carlton and Hawthorn, and the back page had a photo of him with blood streaming from his eye, six goals, BOG. And I just thought... Well,
the warrior.
Well, the team I played at the time, our coach pulled that section of the paper out, or what was the back page, and he brought it in and said, that's courage, fellas, on the Tuesday night.
Mm.
It was a public holiday. It might have been the Queen's birthday weekend or something, and... He just used that picture of Lee Matthews and said, there's six goals, blood, you know, pouring out of his eye, but still kicked his six goals and got the, you know.
It was an honour playing with him, you know. He's such a great footballer and brilliant to watch.
All right, mate. Well, for our listeners, I hope you've certainly painted the picture of where the Dolphins are at. Obviously on the front foot, which is fantastic. And all football lovers down here on the Mornington Peninsula, Gary wish you and everyone involved at the Frankston Dolphins the very best for the submission application on the June the 30th. And for all of our listeners who are listening and tuning in to his message, simply is to get out there and buy a membership. They've got a target of 1,000 members by the 30th of June.
Yes, that's
right.
That's
$50 a head.
Mm.
And we all want to see the Dolphins continue. They're a fantastic club, have been for some time, and... As you said, standalone clubs have got a unique character about them. We've seen that with the Borough. They've been struggling as of late as well. But you talk about the VFA. There was no greater club than the Borough, was there?
Yeah, and they won today. They played Essendon at our ground today and they got up by 27 points. So they're undefeated this year, and my old mate Ayrsie is the coach, so he had a smile on his face at the end of the game in our club rooms, and both clubs' teams came back. And we thank Essendon too, because they donated the gate. They were the home team. They donated the gate back to the Dolphins to help us with some funds. So that was a really nice gesture by the Essendon Footy Club as well. So we thank them for supporting us and both clubs, because it was a good day.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for joining us and make the special effort to join us today in the studio, Gary. And as I said, on behalf of everyone here on the Mornington Peninsula and at RPPFM, we want to see the Dolphins onwards and upwards and wish you all the best for your submission on the 30th of June.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks, fellas.
Thanks for joining us on After the Siren today.